From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas will be here in just a moment to talk trade wars, real wars, and media wars. And the century-old institution of the Boy Scouts lost its moral compass back in 2013, and as a result, it has now lost its identity. John Stenberger, chairman of Trail Life USA and president of the Florida Policy Council, joins me to discuss the Boy Scouts' announcement yesterday that they were dropping boy from their name. Also, I was at the White House earlier today at the Rose Garden, for a major announcement that coincided with the National Day of Prayer. Counselor to the President Kellyanne Conway will be here with the details. And we'll also talk with FRC's Travis Weber, director of our Center for Religious Liberty, about the impact of President Trump's executive order protecting religious liberty that was issued 1 year ago. Has it made a difference? We'll talk about it here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. Pastors, let me remind you, coming up May the 23rd through the 25th, we'll have our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Briefing here in Washington, D.C. We still have a few seats, rooms available. So check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, as I was mentioning, trade wars happening everywhere, real wars, yes, unfortunately, and the threat of those wars, and, of course, the media weighing in. It's all unfolding all at once. Joining us now, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Ted, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me start with the real wars, or the potential real wars. I was in Israel earlier this week when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made his presentation on Iran's nuclear program, and he did it in English.
Yep.
That was very significant. Who do you think he was communicating to?
Well, I thought the presentation that the Prime Minister made this week was nothing short of extraordinary. I think he principally had an audience of one, and that was President Trump, that he was talking very directly to. But he was also talking to all of America. He was talking to all of our allies. And he was talking very directly to Iran as well. And the presentation that he laid out was unlike any speech any head of state has I think, given in history. It was mm-hmm. remarkable in its power and its force. He was like a prosecutor laying a case out to the jury. And he was relaying, as you know, the results of an incredible intelligence operation where the Israeli intelligence, the Mossad, captured over 100,000 secret Iranian documents that demonstrate that Iran for over 20 years has been working actively trying to develop nuclear weapons, and that the representations they made, that all the promises the Obama-Iran deal was based on, were all a mountain of lies. And I think the Prime Minister, in fact, I would encourage your listeners to Google the speech and watch it yourself. It's that powerful. It's worth watching and listening and seeing the evidence yourself of original Iranian photographs and charts and memos and even videos of their scientists working to develop nuclear weapons directly contrary to everything they said as part of the Obama-Iran nuclear deal.
I thought the presentation was riveting. And I know that you, I mean, you've been a critic of the deal that President Obama made. Does this presentation coming at the time and with this timing, right before President Trump has a renegotiation, nixes the deal, modifies the deal? I mean, I have to think that in large part, or in, at least in part, the Prime Minister was speaking to the American people and showing them the evidence that's out there.
I think that's exactly right. And it's the national security implications of the Obama deal now are number one, that we have allowed billions of dollars to flow to the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. And Iran is directly responsible for the murder of hundreds of U.S. servicemen and women. But number two, that those billions of dollars under the Iran deal, as Obama signed off on it, is scheduled to sunset in just a few years, after which that deal has no problems at all with the Ayatollah Khamenei possessing nuclear weapons. I think that is profoundly foolish and is the greatest national security threat facing America. It's also the greatest national security threat facing Israel. And I believe the path before President Trump is clear, that we should withdraw immediately from this deal. We should reimpose crushing sanctions. We should urge our allies to do the same. And we should make clear that under no circumstances will the Ayatollah, who regularly chant death to America and death to Israel, under no circumstances will he be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons.
Yeah, Senator Cruz, I think it's quite evident from the presentation that the Prime Minister made, something, I mean, we all really knew to be the case, but now we have the evidence that you can't trust anything that comes out of their mouths. They lie. They've lied the whole time.
Yep. Well, and one of the things that Prime Minister Netanyahu did so powerfully is he opened the presentation with videos of the Ayatollah Khamenei, of President Rouhani, of Foreign Minister Zarif, making commitments on video where they're saying, we have not sought a nuclear bomb, we do not seek nuclear weapons. Indeed, one of them said, it would be against our religion to seek nuclear weapons. It would be immoral and we would never, ever do it. And then he immediately cuts to their own video of their scientists doing it at the explicit written directives of the people who are claiming they would never seek nuclear weapons to murder us with.
Quite eye-opening and not shocking, but very revealing. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, my guest. Let's talk trade wars. One of the things you've been working on in a unified effort with other members of the Senate and the administration is to take this take a stronger look at NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Something that's high on your list of priorities.
It is, and the reason is it impacts jobs, it impacts economic growth in Texas powerfully. The most consistent concern I hear from Texas business owners, from Texas farmers and ranchers, is concerns about what's going to happen on trade. And in my view, renegotiating NAFTA, it could be a good thing or a bad thing. It could be a good thing if we use this as an opportunity to expand our access to the Mexican markets, to the Canadian markets, to increase trade, that will benefit the country. It'll benefit Texas and it'll benefit the whole country. On the other hand, if this becomes a vehicle for erecting barriers to the U.S. market and for shutting down trade, I think that would be very, very harmful. And the challenge right now is there are widely divergent voices within the Trump administration. There are some voices that are pushing for the first path and some for the second. I can tell you, Tony, I have emphatically made the case to the president directly and to virtually every senior member of the administration that we should be expanding trade, not shutting it down, and that, in fact, the single greatest opportunity on NAFTA renegotiation is energy, opening up the Mexican energy markets where they have vast resources there. Doing that could produce thousands of high-paying jobs, both in Mexico and the United States. It'd be a win-win for everybody.
Where do you think, Senator Cruz, where do you think the negotiations or the potential negotiations with China on trade are going to end up?
You know, China, I am more optimistic. One of the consistent patterns of the Obama administration for 8 years was that they were so weak in dealing with China that China just ran all over us. And the Obama administration did not vigorously or effectively advocate for American businesses, for American consumers, for American producers. That's an area where I think the Trump administration is doing far more, is leaning in much more vigorously. Is addressing things like the theft of American intellectual property, which is in China, is in significant degrees a matter of state policy. And the intellectual property theft is massive. I'm encouraged that the Trump administration is using the economic and diplomatic tools we have to press back on that. Yet, you know, a couple of years ago, I sat down with the senior leadership of John Deere. And they described to me how incredibly difficult it is to sell a tractor in China, that China puts all these non-tariff barriers in place, specifying through regulatory means what a tractor has to have. And when an American company tries to design a tractor to meet them, they change them so that only the Chinese tractors suffice. That sort of gamesmanship is taking advantage of America, and I'm hopeful the Trump administration will make – make progress turning that around.
Yeah, hopefully they'll plow some new ground when it comes to trade with China.
Well said.
Let's talk, but before we run out of time, I want to go to the media wars.
Sure.
You are not unfamiliar at all with the hostility of the media. We've worked closely together on a number of things, including in the primary. Are you at all surprised with how the media has responded to President Trump, I mean, since day one?
You know, I'm not, but it is sad to watch. The media is on full-scale meltdown. They are consumed by Trump derangement syndrome, where you can see them just foaming at the mouth. And there's an irony to it, because the media played a big part in his election to begin with by covering then-candidate Donald Trump round the clock with $3 billion of free media, and now they hate him so much that they don't even pretend to be impartial. It's actually one of, I think, the real upsides of where we are, and I think there are many upsides of where we are, but one of them is that it really has unmasked the media for the partisan warriors that they are. And ironically, I think the media, unbeknownst to themselves, are some of the president's best friends, because they're so unfair, they're so filled with hate that anyone watching them says, well, gosh, if those guys are that upset, he's got to be doing something right.
I think the polling reflects that.
Exactly.
I absolutely think it does. It is shocking to watch, but I think you're absolutely right. I think the lines have been drawn so clearly, the curtain has been pulled back, whatever metaphor you want to use, but it is clear now where the media stands. The only parallel I would say that was similar is, you remember how they used to, the media loved John McCain until he was the presidential candidate against Barack Obama, and that tended to change things for him.
It did, and if you remember, McCain, when they turned on him, said something to the effect of, I thought you guys were my base. And, you know, that was true right up until the minute he was the Republican nominee.
It is quite clear. The sides have been chosen, and it's good to know, though. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons the media is losing ground with the American public. They just don't pay attention to them anymore.
Well, and I'll tell you, even more worrisome than the old media, the print media and broadcast media, is social media and the tech titans. You know, a couple of weeks ago we had Mark Zuckerberg testifying in the Senate, and I am deeply, deeply concerned about the partisan bias, about the extreme left-wing agenda, and the power that Facebook and Twitter and Google have is something William Randolph Hearst and the Yellow Journalist could never have imagined. We need to be very serious dealing with that.
Without question, that is the future. Senator Ted Cruz, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, my friend. And let me encourage everyone, come to tedcruz.org, tedcruz.org. Thank you.
Will do. All right, folks, what's in a name? Well, a lot. And the name change announced from the Boy Scouts reveals how the organization designed to help boys make the transition successfully from boyhood to manhood, well, they're now searching for their own new identity. Coming up next, we'll talk with John Stenberger, chairman of the board of Trail Life USA. That's next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. As I mentioned earlier today at the White House, the president hosted a National Day of Prayer and made a major announcement. We're going to talk about that a little bit later with Kellyanne Conway. Also, Travis Weber going to be joining us to talk about the impact of the president's executive order issued 1 year ago tomorrow. Has it had an impact? We're going to talk about that. But first, yesterday, the Boy Scouts of America announced it is changing its name by removing the word boy and launching a new campaign called Scout Me In. I think it should be Help Me Search for My Identity. The decision comes after the Boy Scouts of America decided to admit openly gay identified boys and adults, transgendered boys, and now most recently girls into the historical male organization created over 100 years ago to help young boys make that journey into manhood. Well, to me, it looks like the Boy Scouts of America has lost its way. With us now is Florida Family Policy Council President John Stenberger, who also serves as chairman of the board of Trail Life USA. John, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
All right, is this the last gasp of breath for the Boy Scouts? I mean, 2013 is when they went off the rails, and they've been losing Scouts ever since. What's the future for the Boy Scouts?
Well, you know, a lot of us joked that now that they're letting in girls, they can't call it the Boy Scouts anymore. But I don't think anyone expected that they would actually change the name and remove the word boy. It's really stunning how they're bending over backwards to cater to the LGBT activists and the full expression of the sexual revolution. Basically becoming gender neutral as an organization. And now it's basically kind of a secular youth group with neckerchiefs. It's no longer the kind of troop, local, church-based fraternal organization where boys are being turned into men through camping and hiking and outdoor skills. There's some of that, but a lot of their program is now focusing on scouting for life, after-school programs. They're reaching out and trying to do sporting things with Little League and that kind of thing. So what we know is scouting traditionally really is dying. And with this last move, the Boy Scouts is effectively dead. As far as I can see, it's no longer a boy organization. They have fundamentally transformed it into now something different.
But, John, isn't this just another part of, it's a pretty exaggerated part, a pretty significant part, but the attack on masculinity? the fact that we want to remove the distinction of boys and girls. And I mentioned the origins of Boy Scouts, and I know you're an Eagle Scout, so you know a lot more about this. I never made it past Weeblos. But the reality was that it was created in part because men they wanted to prepare boys to become men to be able to serve in our military, so that there's this idea of masculinity and what it means to be a man. We're losing all of that with the Boy Scouts.
I think that's right. I mean, boys are in a crisis. The culture is basically ganging up on any sense of masculinity. Now, obviously, there's extreme forms of machismo, male expression that are appropriate, but biblical forms of masculinity are eternal, and these are things which are going to be rooted in the natural order, rooted in the biological reality of men having more testosterone, more muscle, having biology that's different. These are not just interchangeable parts as if it's some kind of Mr. Potato Head. I mean, fundamentally, men and women are different, and that's the reality, the biological reality, that they're just kind of putting their hands and fingers in their ears and denying and acting like it doesn't exist. And it's sad because not only is it an issue of symbolically, it's confusion, moral and gender confusion for young people involved in the program, but Tony, even more worse, my concern is youth protection. This is a fundamental youth protection issue. They camp openly gay boys with other boys who are not gay or do not act out as gay. They make no differentiation between them. They camp them together, and now they're talking about girls. They say it's not co-ed, but the problem is, Tony, you can't trust anything they say. I mean, they started day one saying it was only going to be boys. Then they went openly gay adults, and I was there. I was there when Rex Tillerson, on the stage, he was asked the question, what happens when girls want to join? And he looked to the general counsel, Richard Matthews, and they all said, we're going to look at the birth certificate. That's the final answer. And we couldn't trust them then, because now they're going back on that now. And even a month ago, Tony, when they said, we're going to let girls in the program, their own spokesperson said, we're not going to change the name of the Boy Scouts. There's no plans to do that. And here we are a month later, so they can't be trusted. Even though they say it's not co-ed, they're going to keep them separate. The reality of it is the scarce resources in the troop, scarce leadership. Ultimately, it's going to be all together, and it's going to provide more abuse between young people that you can't regulate like you can adults.
Right. But here's the good news. While people, are disheartened, discouraged, and disillusioned by what the Boy Scouts have done, as a result, churches shutting down their troops, parents pulling their boys out, there is an alternative that is growing rapidly. Trail Life USA now has 739 local troops in 48 states, and it's growing almost by the day.
We're very excited about Trail Life and being embraced by more and more churches and denominations as people understanding. Parents want a program they can trust, right? If you're going to put your kid, leave them overnight, you want people that you can trust. Our leaders are trained thoroughly, way more than in the BSA. The training's more rigorous. They do it more regularly. The churches give direct oversight to the leadership, so there's hands-on relationship there. And this program is Christ-centered. It's boy-focused. Focusing on outdoor adventure and character building and leadership. It's just an amazing way to have a young man come into his own and understand. Really, we think there's something very spiritual, Tony, about being in nature and seeing the majesty of the beauty of the mountains and away from the electronic devices and the screens and really just understanding what it's like to be a man and to grow into being a man with other men's help.
Yeah, and Trail Life is a... I actually think its future is more promising than the Boy Scouts ever were because it has a solid biblical foundation, and we're going to continue to encourage people to check that out. John Sinberger, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for your leadership.
Thank you, Tony.
Yep, check that out, folks. Go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. It's really a great program. The Family Research Council back in 2015. I think 15 was a part of launching this. The die was cast back in 2013 when the Boy Scouts opened its doors to homosexuality. There was no question the end was coming. Well, I think it's here. All right, coming up next, Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president, joins us to talk about an announcement the president made today in the Rose Garden. That's coming up next. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, an amazing event today in the White House Rose Garden. It was the National Day of Prayer, but it revealed a lot more than the fact that flowers are blooming again in America. Namely, it showed that religious freedom is blossoming. The president, during the course of his remarks, brought onto the platform two men. John Ponder, once a convicted bank robber, and Richard Beasley, an FBI agent, who put him behind bars. Now, here's a short clip of the president telling the story of John on the stage. Listen to this.
John was in and out of jail for years until at age 38, he was arrested for bank robbery. You don't look like a bank robber, John. It's come a long way. John soon ended up in federal prison, relegated to solitary confinement. That's where God found him. John began to read the Bible and listen to Christian radio. One morning at 2 a.m., he woke up to the voice of the great Billy Graham. Reverend Graham's words came through the airwaves. Jesus wants to be Lord of your life. That night, John dedicated his life to Christ.
So incredible. Incredible.
He goes on to say that he spent the rest of his time in prison praying, studying the Bible, and bringing the Lord to his fellow inmates. Then the president went on to tell the story about the day after John's release, he had a knock at the door. Well, it was the man who put him in prison, Richard Beasley. And he said this to him when he opened the door and he talked to him. He said, "I want you to know that I've been praying for you. God," and he went on to say that God called me to the FBI in part because of you. And the president went on to say that the two are now lifelong friends. The amazing part, there's a lot of amazing points to the story, but John now runs a ministry that has helped more than 2,000 former inmates rejoin society. He has a ministry using the gospel to transform the lives of those who have been discarded. But the amazing thing that was on display there, and I haven't seen this in the press, I don't know if anybody got it, but on the stage was an FBI agent who arrested a man who robbed a bank. He admitted that he had been praying for him, went to his house after he was released, and said he was praying for him. You know, if that happened a few, well, first off, it would never would have happened a few years ago under the previous administration. We didn't celebrate faith. We didn't celebrate Christianity in the workforce. In fact, most likely, Agent Beasley would have been demoted, not celebrated. And this is a sea change when it comes to religious freedom in this country. The fact that we now have an administration that is protecting, not attacking, religious freedom. And we're going to be joined by Kellyanne Conway, who is a counselor to the president. And do we have her? Not yet. All right. We're working on getting her. But the all right, now we have her. Kellyanne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm great. I was just telling our listeners about today's event in the Rose Garden, and the highlight for me was this: when the president brought John Ponder and Richard Beasley onto the stage. What an illustration of religious freedom to be able to live out your faith in such a way that it impacts the lives of others.
Well, there's no question, and I really hope, Tony, at some point people will take 20, 30 minutes out of their day and go back and watch that entire event. How beautiful it was to have the Christian choir there opening up the event, and then you had six faith leaders all representing different faiths come to the podium and offer prayers. And then, of course, the vice president and the president. And this is something that's been important to President Trump since he got elected, and certainly before he got elected. On the campaign, he made very clear he would be a friend to people of faith, a defender of religious liberty. He'd be pro-life, and indeed he's delivered on all of that. And you saw that in sharp relief. You also saw a president who genuinely enjoys himself when he is able to host the National Day of Prayer in the Rose Garden. It was a very mm-hmm. exciting day for him, and he went to Reverend Graham's funeral in North Carolina a few months ago. He and the First Lady visited him as he lied in state because he knows that this is a nation that has as its core prayerfulness.
And it appears to me, and I've been watching the president now, not as closely as you have, but since the general election, he seems to have become very comfortable in that environment with evangelicals.
He is indeed, and he walks with them. He absolutely walks with them, and he knows how important it is for all of us to come together and recognize that, we're trying to protect religion from the state, not the other way around, and he's got it right.
Kellyanne, we're up against a break. I want to talk about the announcement the president made today at the National Day of Prayer, which is another significant step when it comes to religious freedom. So hold on for me, if you will. Folks, don't go away, because on the other side of the break, Kellyanne's going to continue. We're going to talk about the announcement by the president, another executive order today, announcing another step for religious freedom in America. That's coming up next. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, as we were discussing earlier today, the president hosted a National Day of Prayer event in the Rose Garden. In this event, which was, you know, was a call to prayer, and we had many people praying, and it was a prayer for unity. That was the theme for this year's National Day of Prayer. In fact, it was 30 years ago Ronald Reagan signed this into law. And it's, I wouldn't say it's been happening every year. It didn't happen the last 8 years, but it's happening now. And in the midst of this, the president made a major announcement of a new initiative. And joining us is Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president. Kellyanne, tell our listeners about the president's announcement today about the Faith Initiative.
Sure. So the president today signed an executive order on the establishment of a White House Faith and Opportunity Initiative. And the reason he did this is because he wants the public and this office to provide recommendations on the administration's policy agenda affecting faith-based and community programs. And in so much of the work we do here, Tony, we see that how important it is that these decades-old faith-based organizations are in us helping to find solutions to help Americans. It really is amazing for us to be able to tap into that. So also in this this office, he wants recommendations on programs and policies where we can effectively start to bend the curve in the right direction on poverty. And he also wants us to understand if there are any failures where we're trying to protect religious liberty under the law and to reduce burdens overall in the exercise of free religion. So this also creates a White House Faith and Opportunity Initiative within the executive office of the president. He wants it here where he is. We'll have a new advisor to the White House on faith and opportunity. And all executive departments and agencies that do not have Centers for Faith and Opportunity initiatives currently will designate a liaison to the initiative. Essentially, this is the way to protect conscience, to protect religious freedom and liberty, and to really advocate for what we all know is the center of our nation and its founding, and that's prayerfulness and faith.
You know, Kellyanne, I've been asked, you know, what's the difference between this and what President Obama did, which is a vast difference in his community organizing office he had. And, of course, President Bush that initiated the faith-based initiative. The difference I see between President Bush's executive order on the faith-based office and this faith initiative is that this isn't just giving out grants or making sure people are of religious organizations can get government grants. This is actually looking at government policy through the filter of people of faith to make sure that they're not in any way being kept out of the process of solving these problems.
That's right. Not only do you have to worry about not being excluded, the president is saying you are included, and there's a big difference. People who always felt they were playing defense and felt that they were in the wilderness for all those years know that they've got a seat at this president's table, and he's proved that. It's not just something that he's talking about, something that's in some executive order. He has walked it since he got here. Following shortly on that impassioned defense of life on that October 19th, 2016 debate against Hillary Clinton, where essentially Donald Trump did, as a non-politician businessman who for much of his adult life had been pro-choice, what so many of our pro-lifers had never done from a presidential debate podium, Tony, which is turn it around and say, excuse me, you're the one who's extreme. You would rip that baby out of its mother's womb right before it's born. And I think from that moment and from the president signing the letters committing to get rid of partial birth abortion if it reached his desk, restoring the Hyde Amendment, nominating pro-life justices to the Supreme Court, but also to the Federal Circuit and Federal District Courts, also him agreeing to sign into law the Pain Capable Act. If they put it on his desk, he will sign that into law. And so he's been doing this since before he got here, and you know, everybody knows the whole litany of things that he has done: the Mexico City policy, the state-based Planned Parenthood funding, that people, states no longer had to fund them, certainly got Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court and many others. But also, I think it should not be lost on people that he and the vice president were the first president and vice president to ever address the March for Life. We've had remarkable and remarkably effective and compassionate pro-life presidents, but none had ever addressed the March for Life live.
No, and I'm going to be talking just a moment, kind of the list of what has happened in the last year since the president's first executive order on religious freedom. It is quite remarkable. Kellyanne, before I let you go, I just want to ask you one question on an issue that you're very much involved in, passionate about, and it's the opioid crisis. And I have to say that I would not think that there's a place where the faith community can play a more significant role than in that.
You're right, and to their enormous credit, Tony, they're already there. They've been playing a role. They've been on the front lines of different public health crises and crises of morality, frankly, in this country for decades. And so they are frontline players in this. I've gone around the country. I've met with a number of faith-based employers, faith-based organization leaders, and they're there to help. They're coordinating and communicating with and solving these problems with our local law enforcement and other federal interdiction partners. They also are talking to health professionals. Of course, they administer to those who are already addicted. They're trying to break down the stigma and the silence for those who may need help and are afraid to speak up. They're more and more, they are coordinating with fire stations. Do you know in some of our counties around this country, Tony, a fire station is 4 or 5 times more likely to respond to an overdose than to a fire? And so you see these faith-based leaders. We call this the crisis next door because no state has been spared and no demographic group untouched. And we want people to know that, yes, there's treatment and recovery, there's prevention, education, there's interdiction and law enforcement, but that at the end of the day, we have to understand 174 of our brothers and sisters in this country die of drug overdoses every day. It's a leading cause of death over breast cancer, gun violence, and also plane crashes, for example, accidental death. So when you put it into that perspective, when you hear just the unbelievable numbers, you recognize there's a huge role for the faith-based organizations to play. And Tony, many people will tell you, oh, you know, why would a Republican conservative administration get involved with the drug crisis? We've been trying to do that for years. Bill Bennett had it right many years ago. You focus on this as a nation. You do a whole-of-government approach, all the while telling everybody, hey, he's the president, this is the White House, this is Washington, and we're leaning all the way in, but all the while making sure that people who are closest to those in need, which of course are our community-based, faith-based leaders, people closest to those in need know best how to administer to those needs. So we don't want to get in the way of that. In fact, Congress recently ponied up $6 billion for the opioid crisis. That's an historic amount of money, and it will go to treatment and recovery. It will go to law enforcement and interdiction. It will go to prevention and education. But we so appreciate the great work of the men and women of the faith-based community in helping to treat and to our brothers and sisters in need, but also to help our youth understand that they're worth more than some street drug they paid $5 or $10 for. They're worth more than that cocaine. They're worth more than that heroin or that meth. So the last thing I would tell you is it's incredibly important for people to realize opioid crisis is different. It may end with somebody in the back alley with a vein in his or her arm, but it begins often enough in our own medicine cabinets. And that tiny little bottle where the label bears the name of the local pharmacy and the family doctor is tricky. People think, hey, this is meant to help someone somehow. If I just take a little bit, it won't hurt me. And that's where the harm begins. So we all should be more aware, educate each other, know what fentanyl is, and don't be afraid to reach out and help each other. Thank you, Tony.
Kellyanne, thanks so much for being with us. Great to talk with you.
God bless you. Take care.
All right. See you soon. Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president. All right. Let's talk now about what's happened. It was 1 year ago tomorrow. The president issued his first executive order on religious freedom, also coming during the National Day of Prayer event. This was the one that we've talked about quite a bit, going out across federal agencies to ensure that people of faith were not being excluded from the process or discriminated against in any way. So what's happened in that year since the president issued that executive order? Joining me now to give us an answer, Travis Weber. He is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
You wrote a paper that was a report, I should say, that was released earlier this week. 1 year later, the impact of President Trump's executive order protecting religious liberty. What's it say?
Sure. So we go through the impact and the many ways that people may not be aware about the impact of the May 4th religious liberty executive order from last year. And basically, if we're going to sum this up, we can say that we now have at least 44 schools giving educations to 148,000 students that were involved in litigation that are better off now because of President Trump's action. In addition,
are these like colleges, universities?
Yeah, colleges, universities. These were involved in the HHS mandate litigation, objections to being forced to provide abortion-causing drugs and services
like
against
Oklahoma
their beliefs.
Oklahoma Wesleyan University.
Oklahoma
Dr.
Wesleyan.
Piper.
A number of schools. Yeah. Many people are not aware of the impact, the vast impact. And this does not even include the schools that may have had objections but not been part of the litigation.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of groups that are protected here, at least groups serving up to 13.7 million people with health care and food, part of Catholic umbrella organizations, many of which involved in this litigation, not all, but all of them better off, more protected because of the HHS actions taken as a result of the executive order. And that's just one area. Executive orders impacted a number of areas. And this is all, when we look at just the religious liberty implications of this one executive order.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the small business owners that have been impacted by this policy. For instance, a man that we've actually had on the program before, Mr. Vanderboon,
yes,
who had a meatpacking plant in West Michigan.
It is a great example of a tangible impact. You have a small business owner employing 45 people, lives out his faith. One aspect of that is leaving literature on his break room table supporting marriage between a man and a woman.
It's his business.
It's his business. It's his break room table. And he was simply countering the pro-same-sex marriage argument, right? Because of this, however, he was prosecuted, in essence, under an anti-harassment policy by USDA officials. Right now, aside from the fact that why do you have Agriculture Department officials looking at one's beliefs about marriage, besides that point, it's not harassment to express your views. And it unfortunately took – it shouldn't take a change of administrations to make this clear. Right. But thankfully, the President Trump's USDA has made this clear in a policy explicitly protecting religious freedom in this context. And Mr. Vanderboon can rest easy now.
Well, an area that you've been working with General Boykin and myself tracking for quite some time has been the military, which has been a battleground when it comes to religious freedom in the last decade.
Very true. And one of the cases detailed, and folks can read more about it in our report, but a case of Colonel Bohannon. Colonel Bohannon did not want to sign a certificate of appreciation for a same-sex spouse. He said, look, we'll get this signed by someone else, right? So at that point, you would think, well, okay, everyone's happy here. Well, no, there was a complaint of discrimination filed against him. And ultimately, it took the Secretary of the Air Force Authority to rule for his in his favor, saying, look, his religious freedom law and policy demands that he be protected. And they cited the executive order and the DOJ guidance explaining the Religious Freedom Restoration Act framework that should be followed here. So that framework was followed. And when it was followed, he was protected. The person still got their certificate, and you have a win-win for all parties involved. So this is an example of the proper approach that we need to see implemented in other cases going forward still.
Which has been the standard historically is what we call accommodation, that people's religious beliefs and convictions should be accommodated. That's what the colonel was seeking. But under the Obama administration, there was no accommodation in many cases. In fact, there was either forced celebration and acceptance of something that ran counter to many people's moral and religious beliefs.
Yeah, it ultimately comes down to imposing a philosophy and ideology of, in their minds, there's no discrimination, end of story, which excludes entirely the First Amendment protections of free exercise of religion. And when this was applied to people like Colonel Bohannon, you're basically telling him there's no place for a Christian in the public square, in the military, be able to run a small business. It's essential that we get this right. And some of these agencies, the guidance is getting it right. There's still other guidance out there, which it'd be good to have clarification on the books to address issues that may arise. But Colonel Bohannon's case and that of Mr. Vanderboon are success stories at this point.
So, Travis Weber, 1 year after the president issued this executive order protecting religious liberty, has it done that?
It has protected religious liberty, and we're going to continue to strive for that to be protected and be vigilant about that going forward.
There's still cases out there. There's still policies in place that have yet to be brought in line with the executive order. I mean, we're still seeing some of that in the military, but we've changed directions.
We've changed directions, and we're coming back to a place of religion being acceptable as it should be in the public square in our country.
Well, that is good news. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, if you'd like to actually read the report, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. 1 year later, the impact of President Trump's executive order protecting religious liberty. Now, I know you may not be a policy wonk and want to see all this. It's not really policy. It's just examples of what's happened. And I think this is important because you're not going to see this in the media. You'll hear it on Washington Watch. But you're not going to see this kind of information in the media because they don't want to give President Trump credit. All right? They don't want to show that there is a sharp difference between him and Barack Obama when it comes to religious freedom. Anyway, look at it. Share it with your friends. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.